Right now, though, we talk to Dan Brotman. Dan is a seasoned global traveler. He's explored everywhere and anywhere, but what's best about Dan is his way of conveying the stories. He's got a unique way of diving into culture, history, and identity through travel. So, Dan, you can hear the smile on my face. Great to chat to you again this afternoon.
Great to chat to you from a snowy Montreal.
That's definitely not the case here. You're living in the wrong hemisphere, Dan, but we'll have that conversation another time. Let's talk all things India. And before we start, it's the first destination that you've spoken to me about where I have been. And Dan, I'm just going to say it out like it is. It's hard travel, India. Hard travel.
Well, the type of India trip I did was not too hard. I actually did a trip to India that was solely focused on the Jewish community in India. So we didn't go to the Taj Mahal. We didn't go to a lot of the typical tourist places. We solely focused on the 5,000 or so odd Jews who still live in India, what the community looks like today, their history, and where they're going.
Okay, so now I want you to talk to me about that. I'm presuming it's Kerala, but I'm wondering, was it more than that?
Yeah, so our trip was, first of all, I went with a joint distribution committee. So the JDC is an organization that provides assistance and aid to various Jewish communities around the world. They've actually started providing aid even to the South African Jewish community. And part of the reason why they stepped in India is because the community is really, really diminished. So when the state of Israel was founded, there were about 30,000 Jews in India. Today, there are under 5,000 Jews. It is a rapidly aging community. A lot of the community made Aliyah after Israel was founded, and in subsequent years, some went to places like the UK. And believe it or not, in Toronto, there is an Indian synagogue. So there was a large enough Indian Jewish population to have their own shul. So they either went to Israel or to other parts of the English-speaking world. What's interesting about Jews in India is they're kind of divided into three different subsects. So the first subsect, they're called the B'nai Yisrael, and they're actually sort of the most mysterious. So they were a group, they look like Indians. So they look just like any other person in India. And they are apparently the descendants of Jews who in the second century CE got shipwrecked. They were leaving from the land of Israel. They got shipwrecked on the coast of India and stuck there. And they became the largest segment of the Jewish community. Now, what's interesting about the B'nai Yisrael is that when many of them made Aliyah in the 1950s and 60s, they were not actually recognized as halachically Jewish. And it was only in the 1960s when they were finally recognized as halachically Jewish in Israel. So they were Jewish enough to immigrate to Israel, but not Jewish enough to be married in Israel, for example. And that eventually changed. They were not a very affluent community, but they were the majority. The second part of the community, which is what many of us know, is the Baghdadi community. So, as you know, India was the crown jewel of the British Empire, and it was really a crossroad between Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. So many, many Jewish traders from Iraq settled in India as this transit stop and became some of the wealthiest people in India. I mean, some of the families, I'm sure you know of the Sassoon family. Even the
Kaduri.
Sassoon family, even in South Africa, the Roland Sassoon from Sasfin Bank, they have family links to the Baghdadi Jews in India. And I actually met with Roland Sassoon after my trip to India and gave him a book about Jewish India that I purchased there. They have, deep family links. The Baghdadi community was a merchant community, very, very wealthy. They had their own shuls. They were some of the biggest philanthropists in India. They were very connected with the colonial government, but they were not the majority of the community. And then the third part of the community were the Cochin Jews, the Jews from Cochin. And the Jews from Cochin, many of them apparently came after the Spanish Inquisition when people were fleeing. Some wound up in India. So there was a Jewish community. It was never huge. As I said, it was about 30,000 in 1948, but it was divided, I would say, racially and linguistically between those three different groups. And today it's very interesting. I mean, so what's happened is the Jews who remain in India, I mean, I remember speaking to younger people in the community, you know, the topic of emigration is always coming up. Are we going to stay in India? Are we going to leave? You've got to remember they're well educated, they're English speaking, and they have, you know, family links all over the world. And so sort of what was happening that I saw in India was the young people would leave, they would go to study abroad or work abroad, and they wouldn't return. And what was kind of left was the elderly people. So one day we went to a place called Baiti, which was the old age home for the Jewish community of Mumbai, and just only inhabited by elderly Jewish people in the community. Most of their children had left the country and just kind of dumped them there, abandoned them in the old age home. Sound familiar? And yeah, so we went to, so we went to spend time with them because they were lonely. They were provided with kosher food. We basically went to spend time with them. And it's very apparent whether when you go to shul in India that, or even at an old age home, that this is a community that probably is not going to have much of a future. There is a Chabad in India, in Mumbai specifically, that I went to, which experienced a terrible, terrible terror attack. I'm sure you remember that from the news.
I remember well.
And in that Chabad, they actually kept all of the bullet holes on the walls as a monument, I guess, to what happened. It was a fascinating community. The Jews of India did not, they were never persecuted. There was never a history of anti-Semitism in India. The Jews of India really began leaving, I would say primarily because of Zionism. That's why so many of them went to Israel. And then also, as I'm sure you remember, after independence, India, you know, it went down a very socialist route. The economy wasn't good. And, you know, so I think for many people, they also left for business reasons. And they had, especially the Baghdadi Jews, they had, as I mentioned, the Sassoons in South Africa, they had family links all over the world from these Baghdadi trader families. And so they emigrated. So this is what we're left with, is a community of 5,000. They're still active. They still have organizations. But again, like so many places I see in the world today, the young people are leaving for better study or work opportunities. They leave the parents and grandparents behind. And the community just continues to shrink. And it makes you wonder, is this community that has existed since the second century BCE going to exist, you know, in my lifetime? I think there's a big question mark there.
How did the three different communities get on with one another, the Bnei Israel, the Baghdadi, and the Cochini? Did they intermarry? Did they recognize the Jewishness of each other? Or did they have foribles? Like, I'm expecting you to tell me they did.
Well, my understanding is back in the day when the community was large enough, they were actually quite separate communities that did not have a lot of intermarriage. But I think today, from what I could see, the situation has very much changed. Again, beggars can't be choosers. You're a community of fewer than 5,000 in a country. So I think today intermarriage is much more common. They're much more of a united community. When I went to Beiti, the old age home, it was a mix of Baghdadi and Cochini and Bnei Israel. So I think that beggars can't be choosers, and they are really one community now. What I can say is that I'm guessing here, but I would probably say 80 to 90% of the community remaining in India is Bnei Israel. Again, the Baghdadi Jews were the most affluent with the most trade links around the world. And so they emigrated in the highest numbers. We went to, in Mumbai, the most incredible Baghdadi synagogue, like really, really opulent. And I mean, yeah, I feel like we barely made a minyan. And of the people in the shul, it was mostly the elderly. So I would say the community today is mostly Bnei Israel. And we were in Cochin. We were in Cochin also, which was very, very fascinating. We met the elderly Jewish caretaker. But it's just so interesting because India, you know, it's a country with more than a billion people. I think today it actually is the largest country in the world in terms of population. And to see this country with so many young people that's booming, and then you see a tiny, tiny, tiny Jewish community that's so old, it's a huge contrast to their surroundings.
It's fascinating. We're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. But I mean, it does make you think, why is it that the one country in the world that has no history of anti-Semitism at all, the Jews are still leaving? Doesn't really make that much sense to me. But as I said, Dan, as always, thank you. We're out of time and we'll catch up hopefully sooner rather than later.